Good morning.
And welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Thanks. Thank you for the powers of the heavens for bringing us finally spring. My name is Chris Pesky, and I'll be this morning's board representative for the church. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Also, see the back of your order of worship for some of these announcements. Today is our monthly food pantry collection. Today's collection will go to the Hartman Food Pantry. Monetary donations will be collected during the offertory. Loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks may be made out to LCUUC with the amounts for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted in the memo line. Food contributions can be placed in the bin in the foyer labeled Food Pantry. UU Peace Peddlers. The UU Peace Peddlers plan to bike over the Home Bridge for the United Performing Arts Ride. This is on June 5th. Sue Andrews and Linda Campbell invite you to join them as honorary team members for this 12-mile ride. Please register by Wednesday, May 4th. On the back of the order of worship is a website where you can register. We're looking for volunteers to mow the church property this summer. There's a sign-up sheet in the social hall, or see John Kuhn. Calling all courageous cardboard campers, join our cardboard city. On Friday evening, May 20th, we'll be constructing a cardboard city on our grounds to raise awareness and money for the homeless. This intergenerational event will include a shared soup dinner, bonfire, movie, and other activities. Please see the back of your order of service for more details. This Saturday is our sixth annual Brew Fest at LCUUC, which starts at 6 p.m. All are invited to enjoy a fun evening of homebrew competition. And today is Adopt a Highway cleanup along Highway, what is this called? E. Today, after the service, they'll meet in the foyer at 11:45. Diane McBain has an announcement as well.
Good morning. You will have received a very special sock with your order of service this morning. This is your personal sock for the Sock It to Poverty effort for the Hope Center. If you wish to participate, please take your sock home and drop in your pocket change as often as you wish, plus any additional money you may wish to contribute. The filled socks will be collected on May 22nd. I never miss a Friday volunteering in the clothes closet at the Hope Center, and I would like you to know how much the clients appreciate everything the center does for them. I wish you all could hear the heartfelt thanks we volunteers receive. It's a very good feeling. P.S. Sign up. Oh, I'm holding up the sock. Sign up sheets for the rummage and plant sale will be in the social hall after the service. We need a lot of help. Thank you very much.
There's lots of announcements. I'm just making sure I didn't miss anything here. Regarding the cardboard city, I should mention that the monetary donations for this event will go to the Hope Center along with Sock It to Poverty, and they'll be having sign-ups for helping with the event next week. I invite you to greet those around you. Morning. Morning. going to do this. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and about Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to anything that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service to answer any questions you may have, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like to become a member, I'd be happy to help you with that as well. If you are visiting with us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they will go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for childcare during the service. Religious education classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick your children up from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We'd really enjoy getting to meet you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Conversation Corner is a good place to gather for further discussion after the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. Our speaker today is Reverend Lori Lobbin. She serves at the Unitarian Universalist Church West in Brookfield as the Assistant Minister for Ministership and Congregational Engagement. As a clergy partner in Midwest Ceremonies, Lori also maintains a thriving independent ministry, creating personalized rites of passage for couples and families. Lori was ordained to ministry in May of last year here by our congregation. She received her Master's of Divinity degree from Chicago Theological Seminary and served her ministerial internship at Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Welcome, Lori. And the title of the sermon is Being Humanist.
Good morning. Come on, you can do better than that. Good morning. Today is a joyful day. Our words to call us into worship are from my colleague Heather Janulis. Our prophets died for the freedom of faith, we are here in their spirit. We are here to practice and sustain our living tradition, to light a chalice, claiming for justice the heat and power of fire. We are here seeking freedom from despair, the freedom to be loved as ourselves, and the freedom to grow beyond imagination. We are here, gathered in the name of all that we find holy, and let us give thanks for the gift of gathering here this morning. I invite you to remain seated and sing our chalice lighting congregational response, which is printed in your order of service. Congregation, we gather to nourish the human spirit and build a beloved community. We bring together our insights and our struggles, our joys and our sorrows. We seek to create lives of deep meaning and purpose and to grow in compassion. We seek the fulfillment of our highest hopes and deepest needs in this community where no one is a stranger. Toward that end, I told you this is a joyful day. We celebrate something that's kind of rare, a rededication of a youth who is new to our church, and we welcome several new members to this congregation. Now, we will be formally welcoming some younger children into our community on June 5th, and I am privileged to be your minister for that day also. But this morning, we welcome a youth to this religious community, and I would invite Emily Heisler and her parent or parents to come forward at this time, along with Kelly Duma. Emily was previously welcomed as an infant at the United Unitarian and Universalist Society of Maquanago. Her family has since transferred to this congregation, and Emily has expressed a desire to be rededicated in her new church home. I think we found the feedback spot, Duke. The act of dedicating or welcoming a child has different meanings in different traditions. In our Unitarian Universalist tradition, it is the parents and guardians and the members of the congregation who dedicate themselves to the welfare of the child and, by extension, the welfare of all children. In that spirit, Emily and her parents ask that she be welcomed into this religious community. Duke?
I got the green light. There we go. So, parents, by asking for this rededication, you invite this congregation to share some of the joy and responsibility that is yours as Emily's parents. As you seek our support in the task of fostering with love and guidance the fullest unfolding of your child's personality and gifts, we joyfully say yes to this invitation.
And I say, the raising of children is the most important job in our society and for our future. You have already nurtured Emily for 14 years. Do you promise that, to the best of your abilities, you will continue to help her love herself and others, to gain an appreciation of truth and beauty, and to achieve a deepening understanding of how to live a life of good character with joy and compassion? If so, please say we do.
And to you, the congregation, in our complex world, it is not possible for even the most loving and capable parents to raise a child alone. If our children are to become loving and independent adults, they need the wisdom, counsel, love, and support of many adults in their lives. Will the congregation please join me in saying our promise in unison? welcome you, Emily, into this congregation. We pledge ourselves to your nurture by making our community a place where you may grow knowledge, spirit, and peace. We wish for you joy and courage, passion and happiness as you live your life. We will delight in your accomplishments, share in your sorrows, and encourage you in every way we can as you grow into adulthood.
Emily, in seeking to be rededicated, what do you wish from this gathered community, and how will you give in return?
I wish to be connected to and guided by the love and care of this fellowship of seekers, who remind me that I am never alone in my intellectual and spiritual quest. In turn, I will share the same love and care with others, to the best of my ability.
Every rose is unique, as is each person. Water is the essential element of life, connecting all of humanity and indeed all living things. Emily, we welcome you to this community with the gift of a rose, symbol of your individuality. This rose is dipped in water, which is from our water canyon, to represent your essential connection with us and with all of humanity. And with this water and rose, I bless you, Emily, and welcome you into this community of caring and love. May this act of dedication work its miracle in all our hearts, that we may always be worthy of the promises we have made. So may it be. Now, as we joyfully welcome children, we also celebrate the presence of new members in our congregation. Where's that handheld mic? Would the new members please come forward as your names are read?
Paul and Susan Atkinson, and their sons Cooper and Mason. Beth Brash. Randy Dorn, Doug Dallas, Robin LeClaire. We have a few other new members who weren't able to be here today, Angela Bailing, Josh Stapleton, and Mary Fitzpatrick. We'll catch up with them in the fall. New members, what do you seek in becoming new members of this congregation?
and have you, the congregation of this church, prepared a place in which these people can find the fellowship they seek.
Members of the congregation, are those gathered before us welcomed into this fellowship?
They are, with great rejoicing.
Switch mics. Oh, there we go. I invite all of the new members to light your candles from the chalice and then carry them back to your seats and extinguish them when you get there. And while they're doing that, I invite everyone else to rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 298, Wake Now My Senses. And we're just going to sing verses 1 through 4.
For our morning offering, and although many of us give through the automatic deposit, bank deposit, it's still a moment to reflect on how we support our church. In addition, the monthly food pantry collection is also today for the Heartland Food Pantry, the beneficiary. So the loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with amounts for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted on the memo line of the check, and if you've brought food contributions, please place them in the baskets in the foyer near the entrance. is a special time in our service where we take a few minutes to share our deep joys or deep concerns that we've had for the past week. And if you'd like to share one, please raise your hand and tell us your name, and one of our ushers will hand you the mic. And I'll start us off by lighting our weekly memorial candle, and it's pretty clear in my mind that we want to recognize all those people who were affected by the terrible storms of the past week and hope that they can pull their lives together and be able to move on.
A candle for my brother Dale, who is in hospice and very close to the end of his life.
I'd like to share a concern that at the same time has some joy in it. A week ago today, my 93-year-old mother passed away kind of suddenly. Although she was declining, and she had Alzheimer's, so the joy part of it is that we and she did not survive long enough for that to get to where it was really awful. But hopefully she's with my father and sister somewhere.
This is Jim. Just a candle of joy, which is what I felt yesterday with the return of the Baltimore Orioles and the rose-breasted grosbeaks.
I'll light two candles of joy, one for the new members who are part of our community now, and also for actually the joys and concerns that we just leave in our hearts today and on a left set.
Get comfortable in your seat. For our meditation today, we will begin with a reading from the Buddha and then spend some time in silence for meditation, reflection, or prayer. Then I will ring a bell and we will come back with a reading from the Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh. These words from the Buddha are known as the Five Remembrances. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. let us enter the silence. Our true home is in the present moment. To live in the present moment is a miracle. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth in the present moment. To appreciate the peace and beauty that are available now. For peace is all around us, in the world and in nature and within us. In our bodies and our spirits. Once we learn to touch this peace, we will be healed and transformed. This is not a matter of faith. This is a matter of practice. And I invite you again to remain seated and join in our centering hymn number 391, Voice Still and Small. We have two readings before the sermon this morning, and John Kuhn has graciously agreed to do the first one.
Our first reading is entitled There Is No God, written by Penn Jillette, and it was written for NPR's This I Believe. I believe that there is no God. I'm beyond atheism. Atheism is not believing in God. Not believing in God is easy. You can't prove a negative, so there's no work to do. You can't prove that there isn't an elephant inside the trunk of my car. You sure? How about now? Maybe it was just hiding before. Check again. Did I mention that my personal, heartfelt definition of the word elephant includes mystery, order, goodness, love, and a spare tire? So anyone with a love for truth outside of herself has to start with no belief in God and then look for evidence of God. She needs to search for some objective evidence of a supernatural power. All the people I write emails to often are still stuck at this searching stage. The atheism part is easy. But this I believe, thing seems to demand something more personal, some leap of faith that helps one see life's big picture, some rules to live by. So I'm saying, this I believe there is no God. Having taken that step, it informs every moment of my life. I'm not greedy. I have love, blue skies, rainbows, and Hallmark cards. And that has to be enough. It has to be enough, but it's everything in the world, and everything in the world is plenty for me. It seems just rude to beg the invisible for more. Just the love of my family that raised me, and the family I'm raising now, is enough that I don't need heaven. I won the huge genetic lottery, and I get joy every day. Believing there's no God means I can't really be forgiven, except by kindness and faulty memories. That's good. It makes me want to be more thoughtful. I have to treat people right the first time around. Believing there's no God stops me from being solipsistic. I can read ideas from all different people, from all different cultures. Without God, we can agree on reality, and I can keep learning where I'm wrong. We can all keep adjusting so we can really communicate. I don't travel in circles where people say, I have faith, I believe this in my heart, and nothing you can say or do can shake my faith. That's just a long-winded religious way to say, shut up, or another two words that the FCC likes less. But all obscenity is less insulting than how I was brought up and my imaginary friend means more to me than anything you can ever say or do. So believing there is no God lets me to be proven wrong, and that's always fun. It means I'm learning something. Believing there is no God means the suffering I've seen in my family, and indeed all the suffering in the world, isn't caused by an omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent force that isn't bothered to help or is just testing us, but rather something we all may be able to help others with in the future. No God means the possibility of less suffering in the future. Believing there is no God gives me more room for belief in family, people, love, truth, beauty, sex, Jell-O, and all the other things I can prove that makes this life the best life I will ever have.
Thank you, John. Our second reading is an excerpt from a wonderful little book by Chet Ramo called When God Is Gone, Everything Is Holy. Ramo writes, as I write, two books that do their best to reduce God ad absurdum are being talked about everywhere. Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion and Sam Harris's The End of Faith. These authors go at religion like B-movie slashers armed with Occam's razor. And by the time they are finished, there is not much left but the gory shreds of miracles and superstitions. But I won't go where Dawkins and Harris would like to take me. Something is amiss with their militant slash-and-burn atheism. If I could switch metaphors and turn the new one on its ear, Dawkins and Harris throw out the bathwater with the baby. Now, to explain, in my inverted cliche, let the bathwater stand for the mind-stretching, jaw-dropping, in-your-face wonder of the universe itself, the mystery that hides in every rainbow, every snowflake, every living cell. After all, water, as much as anything in our environment, is an adequate symbol for the creative agency that forges atoms in the hot earth with the stuff of life and consciousness, an agency worthy of attention, reverence, thanksgiving, and praise. Now, as for the baby, let that represent the cultural accretions that religious traditions have affixed to the water of mystery, the anthropomorphisms, the misplaced pieties, triumphalism, intolerance toward infidels, supposed miracles, and other supernatural imaginings. Those are all memes without substance. So yes, toss out the baby, but save the water. Here end the readings. And I could almost say, I'm done now and let's talk about these things. But I won't. It was about a year and a half ago that the ongoing but barely simmering theist-humanist debate within Unitarian Universalism came to full boil. The source of its revival was a full-page, full-color print advertisement placed in the fall 2009 issue of the UU World magazine, placed prominently on the inside front cover. The ad was from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Madison, Wisconsin, and their co-president, Dan Barker, has spoken at this congregation, what, twice? Now, given that the fifth source of inspiration from which our tradition draws is, quote, humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us of idolatries of the mind and spirit, unquote, you might well ask what all the fuss was about. Well, I have a copy of the issue in question. The big front page story was about the gospel of inclusion, Carlton Pearson's universalism. Carlton Pearson was a Pentecostal bishop, African American, had a megachurch in Tulsa, Oklahoma, started preaching universalism, lost everything. The remnants of his congregation have merged with our All Souls UU church in Tulsa. But still, universalism. And there's the inside front cover. It says, are you looking for a sign? How about a bus sign? Definitely not a sign from above. And it shows six different versions of the foundation's bus sign campaign with quotes from a variety of famous atheists. These quotes range from, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose, from Clarence Darrow, to faith is believing what you know ain't so, from Mark Twain. In the following issue, senior editor Jane Greer noted that for the first time ever, an ad had drawn more response than any other part of the magazine. And that was just the emails and letters sent directly to UU World, because the Unitarian Universalist bloggers actively weighed into the fray as well. For weeks, there was traffic in the blogosphere about it. Interestingly, the letters were about half and half. Half supported the placement of the ad, and the other half said, shouldn't have done it. But this was by no means the first time this particular issue had been debated loudly and publicly. So to put it all in context, we can go back to the mid-19th century to pick up the roots of this split in our Unitarian and Universalist heritage, mostly Unitarian then. Emerson's Transcendentalists moved God out of heaven, claiming that one could get in touch with the divine in nature, and through the use of one's own human intuition. The Reverend Theodore Parker preached about the difference between the truth of the actual words that Jesus spoke and the interpretation of those teachings by human beings. At about that time, our forebears were beginning to see how restricting their views to Christianity limited the nature and form of their faith. At the same time, Unitarianism was moving westward into the frontier, establishing churches as new communities were settled, and often the Unitarian church was the only church in town. So from the establishment of the new Western Unitarian Conference in the 1850s, and there's a significant Wisconsin connection to that, to the turn of the century, there was much debate over whether the term Christian should be included in the Constitution and bylaws of the American Unitarian Association or of the Western Unitarian Conference. And if you're interested in the fascinating history, you know, I can go on for another hour about it, but I won't right now. You can study the life of Unitarian minister Jenkin Lloyd Jones, who was the first secretary for the Western Conference. He was a visionary, an evangelist, an innovator, and founder and editor of Unity Magazine, which carried numerous articles and letters concerning the mid-19th century debate over the identification of Unitarianism with Christianity. And the debate over how Christian one had to be a minister, heated up in 1875 when the American Unitarian Association refused to list the Reverend William J. Potter in its annual yearbook or directory of ministers because he declined to say he was Christian. And again in 1894, when the AUA once again amended its constitution, including the phrase Christian churches in the body's official name, as well as the statement that these churches accept the religion of Jesus. Of course, there was also a statement that none of this was to be taken as a creedal test. That was the out. Now, if you're wondering, it wasn't until the mid-20th century that a universalist minister said he was not a Christian. He, in his ordination service, struck the line that he was being ordained to the Christian ministry. Now, I want to make a note here that throughout these heated debates, there was no explicitly anti-Christian writing in the pages of Unity. These ministers weren't against Christianity because most of them actually did consider themselves followers of Jesus. But they saw adherence to a creed as limiting the nature and form of religion. And individual freedom of belief was important to them. Now, all of this really came out into the open in the early 20th century when explicitly humanist ministers like John Dietrich and Curtis Rees went public with their views. John Dietrich served our church in Minneapolis, which has been served by a humanist minister ever since. Dietrich addressed the 1921 meeting of the Western Unitarian Conference, predicting that, quote, religion would have no outlook unless it could be brought into harmony with modern thought, relinquishing the idea of a divine being, and telling humans they are masters of their own destiny, unquote. Think John Dietrich was an atheist? Yes? No? Shake or nod? Are you awake? John Dietrich, arguably the most staunch humanist of his time, rejected the label of atheist. He associated atheism with the view that humans were miniature machines responding mechanically in the universe, denied that personality could be limited to such a simple mechanical explanation. Now, during the time that Dietrich was preaching humanist ideas, these ideas spread. And some of you know that the original Humanist Manifesto was written in 1933. There were 34 men who signed it, and they were all men. Anybody want to take a guess how many were Unitarians? Tom, you already know. Out of 34. I should say, how many were Unitarian ministers? All of them? About half. 15 were Unitarian ministers. And there was one Universalist minister. There were some who were members of Unitarian congregations, but I know who the ministers are. Now, the first Humanist Manifesto spoke of humanism as a religion. It wasn't written to demolish religion. It was written as a manifesto proposing a new religion. It was explicitly a statement of the values of religious humanism. It stated that religions have always been means for realizing the highest values of life. And it was an attempt to establish a religion shaped for the needs of this new modern age. Okay? Now, for a document purporting to proclaim a new religion, the manifesto had some distinct weaknesses. UU minister William Murray, in his book Reason and Reverence, pointed some of these out. One is that its focus was on independence and autonomy of individual persons. They really didn't talk much about relationship or community support. And that's a big part of what religion and church is. It also said nothing about the reality of tragedy in human lives. And we all know about tragedy. It's the inevitable pain and grief and other losses that we suffer. And as a sidebar, John Dietrich was terrible at pastoral care. He told people to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get on with life. Similarly, the manifesto ignored the reality and depth of evil in the world, that there is real evil. It was kind of naive. And it lacked a sense of mystery and wonder, which was alluded to in the reading from Ramo. It suggested that everything unknown was possible to know, eventually, through the use of the scientific method and reason. Now, the second version of the manifesto, written in 1973, was written in the shadow of the experience of World War II and the Holocaust. It was a little more humble, no less idealistic, and the principles that it affirmed are remarkably, or maybe not so remarkably, similar to our Unitarian Universalist principles that you can find in the front of our hymnal. So getting back to that infamous ad, what was all the fuss about? What was all the fuss about? Well, the main point of contention for most people who objected to the ad was that the Freedom From Religion ad appeared to be equating all religion with supernaturalism and using quotes that were deliberately chosen to provoke religious people, whether they were believers or not. Now, you remember those quotes that I read to you. Religion is believing that, you know, in something you know isn't so. I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose. That's kind of in your face. The UU World Business Manager, Scott Ulrich, later wrote in the next issue a carefully worded statement that stopped short of apology, but did admit that this particular ad should have been rejected. It should not have appeared. Now, I agree with the Foundation's stated purpose to maintain the separation of church and state. I firmly believe in that principle. But I agree with Ulrich's reasoning that since the magazine does reserve the right to reject advertising that is inconsistent with the mission of the UUA, the ad shouldn't have been published. We are a religion, notwithstanding that many people like to call us a movement. We are a religion. We are a faith tradition. We gather together as people of faith. We often say things like that at the beginning of our worship services. We may not share a set of common beliefs. In fact, I know we don't. But as 16th century Unitarian Francis David once said, we know that we need not think alike to love alike. Our congregations do covenant to affirm a set of principles, and many of us have come to adopt those as ethical guides for living. And in these days of the Tea Party, there might be danger in knowing as the being known as the atheist church, which is how a relative of ours once characterized us. Some of you might recall that in 2004, the comptroller for the state of Texas ruled that a UU church in Denison, Texas, was not a religion and not eligible for tax-exempt status on the basis that there was no one system of belief. Several other organizations were also had their tax-exempt status pulled. And, of course, it was appealed, and the state of Texas had to go back and approve the tax-exempt status. But it does raise the question of what constitutes a religion. Because the test the comptroller uses was, do members have a belief in God or gods or a higher power? I think the answer is that some do and some don't. Religions. We know that Buddhists don't have to believe in a higher power. But, you know, if we Unitarian Universalists look to our understanding of the interconnectedness of all existence, what we commonly call the interdependent web of life, we can make an argument for a general belief in something greater than ourselves. We are a religion. Now, many of us call ourselves religious humanists. And the philosophy of religious humanism has many positive points, which is why our Unitarian Universalist faith considers it a source of inspiration. Rejecting supernaturalism, humanism reminds us that our faith is rooted in the real world, the here and now, and not in an afterlife that may or may not exist. To borrow Penn Jillette's words, we have blue skies and rainbows and Hallmark cards, and that has to be enough. And it's everything in the world. We have each other, and that has to be enough. And since relationship is emphasized, human forgiveness is the only form of forgiveness possible. We're reminded that treating people right is important. And sometimes we don't have to get it right the first time, because we can forgive each other. Any salvation of humanity from poverty, racism, classism, war, any other evil, must be wrought by human hands. But let's look at that source again. These humanist teachings are supposed to warn us of idolatries of the mind and spirit. Think about that. What if they have become idols? The definition of idolatry is excessive or blind devotion. And I remind you here that there are different varieties of humanism. Humanism, in general, forged from modernism and Enlightenment thought, has not worn well under postmodernism. There are potential problems with humanism that we don't often speak about. There is danger in coming to believe that humanity is functionally ultimate, that we are the top of the heap, the top of the ladder, that we have all the answers. It's the same danger that comes with fundamentalist Christian belief that humanity is the crown of God's creation and that we have dominion over the earth and all its creatures. It's the same. It is easy to slip into this hubris. And good people, such arrogance is unwelcoming to a good number of people who are seeking the freedom of belief and a safe place to seek answers to questions of ultimate concern, which our liberal faith offers. So please remember, if you are a religious humanist, that there are many ways to be humanist. And I was reminded of this recently. A colleague sent me a link to The Christian Humanist. Does that surprise anyone? It's a website with articles on Christian humanism. These are people who believe that the teachings of Jesus, like our principles, are good ethical guidelines for their lives. They don't necessarily believe in God. They don't necessarily believe in any of the supernaturalism or the miracles. But they're followers of Jesus' teachings. And another colleague of mine who identifies as a UU Christian, the Reverend Naomi King, wrote to me recently that she participated in a panel discussion where she was asked whether she thought Unitarian Universalism was abandoning humanism for theism. That's a concern for some folks. Her response was, you know what? We're all humanists. We all believe that what we do matters, and we need to work together to create a better world. There are different flavors of humanism, as there are different flavors of theism and any other kind of ism you want to talk about. We need to stop worrying about that and recognize the diversity within our congregations. Our welcoming embrace as Unitarian Universalists of many beliefs and traditions demands that we find a way to embrace the absence of supernaturalism and yet acknowledge that there is much we don't know and may never know. In another quote from Chet Ramo's wonderful little book is that the three little words that science has done the most for the human race, the three little words that we can say is, I don't know. Because even as we expand our knowledge, so too does the body of what we don't know expand. Think about that one. We need to find a way that uses reason without recourse to cynicism or sarcasm toward those with differing beliefs. A way that helps us become more fully human and maybe more fully and openly humanist, using all of the sources of inspiration available to us. May we make this radical welcome a reality. So may it be so. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join in hymn number 295, Sing Out Praises for the Journey.
Thank you.
It is the tradition of this congregation that the minister rarely gets the last word. So it is time for our polylog. This is a time, it's still a time of worship, but it's an opportunity for members of the congregation to share comments, ask questions of the minister, of each other, and maybe even just bring up something that came up for you during the service. Raise your hand if you want to make a comment, and one of the ushers will bring a microphone. And please say your name so we can all get to know each other better.
Hi, I'm Angel. Just yesterday, oddly enough, I was out front my gallery sweeping, and Sam's in a wheelchair sitting talking to me, and two kids walk up, clearly 18, 20 years old, walked right past me to Sam and said, "Hey, would you like to be healed?" I spun around on my heel and went, "Oh, no, you don't." Because I've had this before, you know, they're trying to invade us through what happened to her. And I said, any healing that's going to happen is going to be from her, and don't you sit and peddle your stuff here. I'm not going to listen to it. And they're asking me why I'm so angry. I said, you just came up to us and told me there's something wrong with my child. You didn't get to know her. You didn't ask any questions. You just assumed she needed to be healed from her position. She's serving her higher purpose. She's doing what she needs to do in this earth, and she's on the path she needs to be on. How dare you? And so I went off on them for a while, and they, you know, left. Thank you. Then another group came into the gallery while I was rearranging paintings, and they were more polite. And I debated with this one young guy who was dead set on convincing me. And after I was done with him, I think I had him convinced that he needed to look into Mahatma Gandhi, the Council of Nicene. You know, I was just listening to stuff. And I said, you know what? Say you look into all this stuff, and you investigate all these books, and you do it. You look at something other than the Bible. And you do that, and if you still have your faith, it'll be stronger. But if not, you'll be wiser. So you need to go looking at things yourself. Don't come in and tell me, after all I've been through in my life, that you know better than me. And I said, a conversation like this, you know, I'll debate with people in my church because we all have different faiths and different beliefs. You know, it's a nice conversation, debating points, talking about what you believe in. But what we're having here, it's tainted because you're trying to absolutely convince me that you're right and I'm completely wrong. And I don't believe there's any one faith that gets you to heaven. It's just not true. Every faith says that. And this debate went on for like an hour and a half. I'm like, when are you people leaving? You know? But it was an opportunity for me to perfect my UU 2-minute elevator thing. So that was it's nice, but it was amazing.
That's a long elevator ride, Angel.
Yeah. I was on my way to heaven. And it's just odd that was yesterday and then to hear this today. But it was interesting.
Some of you know that I'm a cancer survivor, and you know, as are other people in the congregation. And you know, when we were going through that, I was on the prayer list for my mother's church and Tom's mother's church, and I would just say, thank you. You know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. I just don't believe it helps. You're on.
Hi, I'm Sonia. I want to say I disagree with your opinion of that should not have been in the UU magazine. The way I see it, there are things in there that have a theistic bent. Also, I would say I am a secular humanist. Secular, i.e., I'm an atheist, and humanist, i.e., I have empathy for others. I'm not a sociopath. I would say pretty much everyone is a humanist. So to have both parts in there, I think, makes us more inclusive and able to look at the whole picture. And I'm glad that we've had this conversation, that it got the bloggers out there, that we're having the conversation. I think it opens up the religion.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Our faith is open to differences of opinion. And we can have a civil conversation about it. two more. We're just about
it. I'll be short. I'm Jerry, and yeah, your talk reminded me of a talk that Jane gave about a month or so ago about the power of words, about the meaning of words. When we talk about religion, are we talking about belief in a supernatural power, or do we believe that it is a binding of people? Mm-hmm. When we talk about faith, what do we mean? When we talk about Christianity, what do we really mean? I mean, Thomas Jefferson wrote his own version of the Bible. He considered himself a Christian, but when he took that big, thick book and he read it in Greek and he read it in Hebrew and he read it in Latin and everything, and he boiled it down to a little skinny book which we have in our church library of the Jefferson Bible, where he just boiled it down to the ethical teachings of Jesus. And from believing in the ethical teaching of Jesus, he considered himself to be a Christian. And then the last thing I'm going to say is regarding Dan Barker, who's the co-president of Freedom of Religion Foundation, from religion. I invited him here back in the first year that we were in this building, and I told him that I was on the worship committee. He took great offense in that. And I said to him, you know, when the meaning of the word worship is, it comes from the word worship. It's an acknowledgement of things that are worthy, and we consider you worthy. And he accepted, and he came here.
Yeah, we religious language, and I've preached on this too before, we get ourselves all wrapped into knots over religious language. But if we're going to have any hope of real interfaith dialogue, we have to be able to speak the same language. We have to be bilingual or trilingual in order to speak with each other. We have to be able to say the word prayer and God and worship and sermon and things like that in order for other people to understand what the heck we're talking about. One more.
I'm Janice. You're really inspiring and unifying, and it's such a joy to have you here, Lori, as a minister.
It's a joy to be here. And I will note that this time, this day last year is when I was ordained here. So thank you once again, congregation. Now, I have some closing words, after which there will be a sung benediction. It's hymn number 1058 in the Teal Book. Now, there are some choir members who will sing it through first, and then they invite the congregation to sing it through, you know, in unison once. So why don't we all rise just to get ready to sing? Rise in body or spirit. And I'll say the closing words, and then we will do this sung benediction. Our closing words today are from Jean Rickard Rao. We have a calling in this world. We are called to honor diversity, to respect differences with dignity, and to challenge those who would forbid it. We are people of a wide path. Let us be wide also in affection and go our way in peace.
Thank you. Yeah.